guess one of the side stories of the NCAA tournament game last night, the championship game last night, by the way, great, great game. I think it was one of the better championship games ever played. But the question in overtime, how much of replay do you really want as a fan? Do you want a frame-by-frame, magnified, detailed look at a play? Or do you want a gut reaction from the officials to let the game continue and go smooth? Maybe Davide Moretti's pinky was on the ball. I still want to call him David, by the way. But nevertheless, maybe his pinky did touch the ball. And maybe that call was right. It was right technically. But was it right in what we're used to? Which is, hey, the ball appeared to be going out of bounds because a Virginia player touched it and knocked it out of bounds. And plus, since there was a missed foul, let's give the ball to Texas Tech. That was the turning point in overtime last night in which the Red Raiders couldn't recover. Up until that point, back and forth, one possession game. But after that, Virginia then took over the game. And then Texas Tech was out. But it's going to come down to what we want. We talked about this with the Auburn game where Samir Doty, you know, hits Kyle Guy. He goes to the line to shoot three. It's a call that is made. We want officials sometimes to swallow that whistle and let the kids play. How much do we want near the end of a game, of an important game? How much do we want the micromanaging of instant replay? Because it was on display last night. Now, people may think, oh, the spirit of the game was damaged. In the end, it is likely that it's the right call. But at the same time, there's just something that doesn't sit quite right with it, given what that game was displaying to us. A back-and-forth, mano-a-mano fight that got derailed because somebody went one frame at a time to determine that a pinky touched a basketball as it was going out of bounds, deflected by a Virginia player, and thus it was Virginia's ball. It's not a real fitting way to see a game like that end or be marred, but it was. And it really did have a stain on a classic.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Hey, suffering from knee or back pain? Call 800-608-1881. Learn how a comfortably, nearly invisible brace could solve your pain. 90% satisfaction rating, 800-608-1881, 800-608-1881. So last night's championship game, as I mentioned before, something I did not expect. I did not expect the kind of pace that I saw. I did not expect the kind of offense that I saw. I was ready to settle in. I was ready for a good defensive battle. I got good defense, but I also got some scoring, and I got momentum switches. And I got when Texas Tech was struggling, they would find a way to come back. When Virginia was struggling, they would find a way to come back. This was a back-and-forth affair. I loved the pace of it. I loved the way the guys had stepped up and played. I liked everything about it. The lead change and everything. When you're looking for an entertaining game, I got an entertaining game. That being said, I think that call in overtime stains it a little bit. It's a classic. There's no doubt. I mean, this was a fun, entertaining game. I think you'd be hard pressed to find people that were really bored by this. If you were really into this, just saying, listen, I don't care about Virginia, I don't care about Texas Tech, but I want to watch college basketball. I think this was a very, very, very well played, entertaining game. But that call took away something, even if technically it was right. It's just that, look, think about how many times you've seen something like that, okay? Where there's a player, he gets a ball, you know, he kind of gets fouled, but at the same time, a ball gets batted out of bounds. Your naked eye says, well, there's a foul here, and the ball is knocked out of bounds. You're going to give it to the team that had the ball, right? Nobody would have argued that if Texas Tech had retained possession. It seemed like that is fitting for what we come to expect as fans. I don't think Virginia fans would have felt that they were robbed at the moment or anything like that. It's just, for us watching it at real speed, that's what we kind of expect to happen, right? But because it went to replay, it was able to be dissected minutely through video. And again, technically, the call is correct, but what has been now called the spirit of the game, whatever that means, has been compromised. Now, I don't know exactly what that terminology means, but I kind of think in my mind of, we all would have just been okay had Texas Tech just inbounded the basketball. We've seen that a number of times. It didn't look like there would even have been a pinky had not if it wasn't looked forward by the watchful eye of the replay official to determine who had possession. If it had just simply gone to Texas Tech. But I know they were curious as to who had the ball. There might have been a little bit of, well, a little confusion. But a lot of times in those situations, the team where the foul is missed on, they get the ball. And no one is any word for the wiser. But again, good game. Tony Bennett and the Cavaliers getting the championship and completing the story arc of what happened a year ago. And I think that's really important. Because if you're looking, again, I always ask you guys this, right? If you don't have a dog in the fight of a game, what storyline are you rooting for the most? Is it Texas Tech, the school from Lubbock, right, winning a national championship? Is it Tony Bennett and completing this arc of losing to a 16 seed and winning a national title? To me, that was the story arc I was looking forward to seeing how that would play out. Because as I said before, if you were to win, I mean, you were to lose to a 16 seed, okay, as a coach like Tony Bennett did, that's, you become part of that club and you're the lone person of that club. Now, in order to have that story mean so much more in a positive light, you have to follow that up by winning a national championship, which they just did. So what is turning out to be an embarrassing moment turns out to be something that now can be celebrated as a complete story. That there is something more than just a basketball accomplishment. Tony Bennett and every single member of the team that experienced the heartbreaking loss of losing to UMBC and following it up 53 weeks later, or 55 weeks later, with a national championship, are going through, can talk about this story, about this journey in a complete and positive light. Because redemption might be too strong of a word, because we tend to use redemption in more serious situations. I'll give you an example. During Super Bowl week, Ryan Leaf sat down with me and we talked about his story. We talked about his redemption from a guy that was a bust in the NFL to breaking into somebody's home to steal painkillers, to going to prison for that, to coming out and being somebody that is looking to help, looking to support, looking to tell his story to anybody that will listen to try to save a life. That is redemption. Redemption here is just overcoming losing to a team that shouldn't have been on the same court as you. So it's a little too strong of a word. But nevertheless, losing that type of game, and again, not to take anything away from UMBC, congratulations, but the reality of it is, that is a moment of embarrassment to Virginia. That is a moment of embarrassment to the program, because no team had ever experienced that before. I was making a joke about this last week. If an alien came down and said, we really need to speak to speak to every single person that ever lost to a 16 seed in that basketball tournament you guys have. There's only one person that gets to go to the meeting, and that's Tony Bennett. There's only one. So you don't want to have that stain. You don't want to have that moment. You don't want to be the one guy, the one team that has this on their resume. But if you follow it up like they did last night with winning a national title, think about how you can make that into a larger, more positive thing. And Virginia gets to do that. And Texas Tech, as Jim Nance mentioned, could be a force for a few more years. I believe that. I cringe a little bit when I hear that. I don't necessarily like it, because I don't know what exactly the future holds for any program. I think, I have a feeling Duke is always going to be good. I have a feeling North Carolina is always going to be good, Kentucky and all that. But teams that kind of rise up and have their moment and get to a Final Four and get to a championship setting, we'll see. We'll see. But I do agree. I think I like what I'm seeing in Lubbock. One other basketball note that was kind of buzzing through yesterday was that UCLA was making a serious pursuit of Tennessee's Rick Barnes to become their new head coach. And they were able to pay him in the neighborhood of $5 million per year. And I said yesterday, if you're Tennessee, if that's what it takes to keep him, that's what it takes to keep him. He's taken your school and he's gotten rid of kind of the football dilemma that they're in under Jeremy Pruitt, trying to revive that program. He has made you, at least for right now, a basketball school. Keep Rick Barnes as best you can. Apparently, East Tennessee has kept Rick Barnes. He likes living in that area. He likes the people. He likes the school. He likes the administration, and he's going to stay at Tennessee. He's 65 years old. He's in his 60s. He may never get a chance to coach UCLA again, but it does go to show you maybe UCLA, the gig is just not as good right now as other opportunities. Kind of a swing and a miss in a number of areas with guys that they still don't have a head coach. This is UCLA we're talking about. I mean, if Notre Dame was looking for a coach and it took this long, you'd be wondering about the status of Notre Dame football, right? Well, UCLA, even though it's been on a decline, UCLA basketball still has enough of a history and enough of a presence to not warrant this. Where guys are turning it down for Tennessee? I mean, and listen, and here's the thing. Rick Barnes has been the head coach of three football schools. Clemson, Texas, and now Tennessee. UCLA football is big, but UCLA basketball has got more rich history. He could have gone to a basketball school with that kind of pedigree, but instead he is staying at Tennessee because he was able to get the spring game off the headlines because Kentucky basketball was relevant late in March. Good for him. That's not easy to do. But man, UCLA, what a mess. Have got to find a head coach. Cannot find one yet. Got turned down. You don't really turn down UCLA. Or at least if you're in UCLA, you don't think you're going to get turned down. Especially $5 million a year plus bonuses. Don't turn them down. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. By the way, I've been loading boxes and loading and moving into a new house, and I'm so excited about it, but I'm not exactly a spring chicken. That's why I've been using Blue Emu for my aches and pains. A lot of boxes up and downstairs, and Blue Emu, no chill, no burn, no odor, number one selling Emu oil brand in America. Unlike competitors, they don't use capsaicin, they don't use menthol, which gives you that cool sensation. This really does work. Right in. And it feels great. Made in America, the number one selling Emu brand oil in the country. No chill, no burn, no order, Blue Emu. All right, 800-777-2907 on Twitter, at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. Ron with two N's as we roll along on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, you can now earn O Rewards points online at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. How about that? Earn points any way you shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You get $5 reward points for every 150 points that you earn. Visit orewards.com today and become an O'Reilly O Rewards member. Let me repeat that again. Visit orewards.com and become an O'Reilly O Rewards member today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Got a little too O there. Sorry. All right, national championship game last night.
Got to get your O face going.
Got to get your O face going. Nice. All right, so again, talking about Virginia that Texas Tech last night. Now it's Masters Week at Augusta National. So we are really into a really good April.
And we are. But do you feel kind of bad that the other sports aren't getting any love? Or is it this time of the year, like, you know what?
Yeah.
We pay attention to you guys all year. Well, not you, NHL, but NBA. We do pay attention to you a lot. But for this week, we're just going to concentrate on college basketball, and then we're going to give golf its due.
We're going to give golf its due because it's the Masters.
Yeah, I mean, the other three majors, we're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, the other three majors don't even come close to this. Yeah, no, it's wild because the Masters has done a really good job over 20, 30 years, basically since Tiger. I would say since Tiger. Because there was a time when the Masters was still just a golf tournament with a really cool golf course. But it wasn't as encompassing. Like, do you remember before Tiger, people wanting to go to the Masters?
I don't remember anything before Tiger. Right?
Before Tiger.
Yeah,
all of a sudden, I have friends who have no interest in golf, can't wait to go to Augusta.
Well, because it was, I mean, literally, for me, like, my memory of Augusta was, and I hate to say it, well, I'm not, actually, I don't hate to say it, it was for, like, stuffy old white people.
Yeah, pretty much
it. That's really what the golf tournament was. Yeah. I mean, the course was that way, that's what it was, and, you know, it's like, I don't care.
You know, it's funny, when I was in high school, I got to go to this a college, like, it was a sports writer, sports caster kind of camp. It was like during summer, it was for, mostly kids were going to college for that, and I got to go as a high school kid. Gil Santos was the broadcaster, the longtime Patriots. He's passed away, but he was the longtime Patriots announcer on Boston radio. And I got to talk to him, and I remember getting to ask him a question. And I asked him about, has he ever been told not to say certain things like Jack Whitaker was told when he was broadcasting the Masters and he called the crowd a mob? And Gil Santos said to me, and I was a high school kid at the time, he said, I would never broadcast the Masters. This was, you know, late 80s. He goes, I would never broadcast the Masters because they would never allow me to be a member. His name was Gil Santos, right? He said, they would never make me a member. And he was really like, he wasn't like angry with the question, but he was very adamant that he had standards and he wasn't going to accept that kind of standard. And that is all that has been overlooked a lot when you talk about Augusta National and you talk about the Masters, that they were a long time coming before they had their first African-American member, and an even longer time coming before they had their first woman member. Right. So you're right about the club, that club before those changes were made and Tiger sort of brought that course and the importance of that course into relevancy has always been plaguing that tournament and that event was always that, right? And so, as I mentioned earlier, that's why Tiger's win was so significant there in 1997, because it really was a win that just expanded beyond, right? Yeah, no kidding, right? I mean, remember what Fuzzy Zeller said? Remember that?
I can't believe.
Like, Fuzzy Zeller was so, do was you like think, one of the okay, worst things you could say.
All right, because that was in, he said that in 98, right?
97.
No, did he? I thought it was 98, because isn't usually the.
No. Tiger was winning the tournament. They asked Fuzzy about it for next year's dinner.
Oh, okay. I thought we was talking about in 98 about what the menu's going to be.
No.
All right, it doesn't matter. But it's late 90s. Today, if somebody was to say that, that person would be out of golf.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
He pretty much is. The only time we ever bring up his name is, you know, making reference to that.
Yeah. So, but like the one thing about the tournament, too, is because if you win it, you get to go there every year. Like, I don't know what Larry Mize is doing with his life, but I know in 1987 he beat Seve and Greg Norman in a playoff as like a 27-year-old guy, and every year he's at the Masters. Like, I don't know if he's on the Champions Tour. I don't even know if he's playing golf anymore. I don't know what he's doing, but he gets to go to the Masters every year until he dies. He gets to go every year and wear his jacket and gets to go to the dinner, gets to be part of the festivities. So it's one of those events that's taken an exponential leap of importance that goes even beyond the golf crowd, right? It's now something people feel like they've got to make a pilgrimage there. They've got to find a way to get tickets. I mean, there was a time where you could just go do a practice round and just go that day and get a ticket.
Yep.
Like, you didn't have to get a reservation. You could just show up at the window and get a practice round ticket to Augusta. Dan Jenkins one time called it the scene in Gone with the Wind, where there was all the dead Confederate soldiers as far as the eye can see. Dan Jenkins once described that scene at Augusta National because it was a free for all. People would just go anytime they wanted and go. Now, obviously, you needed passes for the tournament when that started on Thursday. But if you wanted to see the course on a Tuesday when they were just practicing, you could just show up and go. Just pull up. And by the way, Augusta National, it's, you know what's cool about Augusta National? These places, like, remember we, Rancho Santa Fe, California, the bridges, that golf course, mm-hmm. I'm sure is tucked away in a really nice, like, winding road that leads up to Country Club Lane, right? Like, amongst the rich houses, right?
Not really.
No?
No.
Like Castle Pines in Colorado is like that, where they used to play the internationals. Like,
it's not, beautiful no, setting. Bridges is not that, not as secluded as you might think.
Really? Well, it's around rich houses, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, no.
That's what I'm meaning.
There's lots
like
of houses.
Hold on. Let me finish this thought. Because I was just using that as an example. Augusta National is smack dab in the middle of Augusta, Georgia. Like, okay, right across the street. Like, you drive down the main street, there's a Piggly Wiggly across the street.
So basically what you're
like
saying,
the entrance to Augusta National is right off of main road.
So it's kind of like Disneyland.
Right. It's right there.
If you've ever been to Disneyland, any one of you guys been out to Disneyland, it's sometimes when you're inside Disneyland Park, it's amazing to think, like, you know, right across the street's a freeway. And then there's, you know, shopping centers and restaurants and there's an apartment building. There's life right outside of Disneyland.
Exactly. Exactly. It's wild. It's really wild because you would think if you were to go there, you would go through the city, and then you would take some road, and then you'd probably go up a hill, and you'd probably go off into some really rich area. All these houses are multi-million dollars, and you go down another winding road, and then there's the golf course. Like most major country clubs are located in America. This is, bam, right there. I mean, you will miss it if you're not looking for it driving down the road. There's just this little sign that hangs out off of the main street that says Augusta. That's where Magnolia Drive is. Like, you turn there and there's the gate, and then you can go in. It's right there.
I think you're spreading fake news.
Sarah, look it up.
No, I'm
look
not.
Look it up on Google Earth.
No, I don't need to. I know what the course looks like. It's off in the country, Tony.
Here's the other thing about it.
Some pristine plot of heaven on earth land.
Now, trust me on this. If you go to Google Earth and you look at it, and this is something that was pointed out to me when I was there, you will see there's another country club that is adjacent to Augusta National Club. I think that's Augusta Country Club. And they say that is even more prestigious than Augusta National. That is way, way, way old school. And that is adjacent to that golf course. So, like, you'll see it on the TV. Like, you can see something behind the 13th tee box. That is another golf course that is adjacent. So these are little nuggets I'm giving you on Augusta National. But seriously, like, you could leave the golf course and go across the street to, like, some restaurant, like fast food joint or something. It's like right there. Like when I went to, I've covered a number of golf courses. I just went to, a couple of years ago, I went to Baltusrol, which is in New Jersey for the PGA Championship a couple of years ago. And like you park at like a school and then you take a shuttle bus and you just go to, oh, this is all right. This is where the country club is. This is where the rich people are. And that's pretty much every golf course I've ever been to. Any golf event I've ever covered. Every U.S. Open, any PGA I've ever gone to, it's the same thing. But it is nuts that Augusta National is right there. So, very fun place. And John Daly should be outside somewhere signing autographs.
Well, maybe he's at that Piggly Wiggly, right?
You get, Piggly Wiggly. I don't know if there is a Piggly Wiggly anymore.
I'm sure there is.
There probably is. It's a good little food chain. But John Daly shows up. He signs autographs. And he makes appearance. He can't play because he didn't win the Masters like he should have. But nevertheless, so. All right, Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, going to join us next. We'll talk NCAA championship, and we'll talk about Virginia. We'll talk about that game last night, college basketball in general. All coming up next. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
How are your credit card bills stressing you out? Call Credit Card Debt Relief Hotline today and learn how to reduce your payments to a fraction of what you owe. Call now for free advice, 800-514-9886, 800-514-9886, 800-514-9886. Virginia, the national champs, beating Texas Tech last night in overtime. Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, covers it. How are you, my friend?
I'm all right. How are you?
Last night, the overall thought of what you got from that game last night, I thought it was an instant classic. Tell me how you process what we saw last night in that overtime game.
Oh, yeah, that was a highly entertaining game. It was, Texas Tech just wouldn't go away. It was riveting stuff, and it was not really the rock fight we expected, although it was for the first, like, 8 minutes. But once, you know, Texas Tech hits like 5 3-pointers in 6 possessions, it was game on. And, man, it was, you know, Virginia would get out and Texas Tech would come back, and Virginia would get out and Texas Tech would come back. And it was really great basketball. The second half featured the two guys that everybody thinks are NBA lottery picks. After each of them were really quiet in the first half. Hunter really carried Virginia in the second half. He was making shots from everywhere, getting rebounds, making passes. He really showcased his talent like we haven't seen it so far in the NCAA tournament. And Culver was getting to the basket, getting shots, getting fouled. I don't think he hit a jump shot all game, but he was really driving past Virginia to get to the basket, which is something that Virginia's defense is designed to prevent. So it was great stuff all the way to the end of regulation, all the way through overtime. It was great. Great back and forth action. But not the kind of thing you would have expected from a game like this.
The call in overtime, the replay on the out of bounds, on the out of ball that was out of bounds, how much did that mar overtime? How much did that mar the game, if at all?
Well, it's hard to say. I never got to see a replay because where I was sitting, you know, they don't show the replay in the stands. I didn't have a monitor. I still actually haven't seen it. So I don't know. If, you know, obviously there were some people on Twitter who just, my Twitter feed was both sides, you know, to which team should have gotten the ball. Obviously it was a huge play in the game, but you don't know what's going to happen if Texas Tech gets the ball. They may not score. It may not end up making a difference at all, but obviously it became harder for them once Virginia got it.
Before we get to Tony Bennett and Virginia, let's talk about Texas Tech. This is a program that people are liking. They like the coach and Chris Beard. They like the direction the Red Raiders are going. Look, getting to Final Fours is tough. Getting to sustaining success in college basketball can be difficult. But are you seeing ingredients in Texas Tech and what Chris Beard is doing that makes they're going to have some staying power? They're not just going to disappear from us in a couple years.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. We'll have to see how well he can recruit off of this Final Four run, because that's obviously the kind of thing that gets a lot of attention for your program. And if he can turn that into a recruiting advantage and get some really good players, because this team was guys that were not saying they weren't great players, because they, you know, they were coached up and they played really well, and they played well together, which is an important thing. But Jared Culver, even he was like a 2 or 3-star guy that turned into an NBA lottery pick that, you know, either people just missed on or he's a late developer. But if he can go out and get some of those guys that, you know, are going to be, you know, 1 or 2 guys that are going to be NBA type guys, then yeah, this program has a chance to sustain itself. His calling card has always been defense. It'll always be defense. And when you play great defense like they do, you've got a chance to win every game that you play.
He was kind of known as a guy that made great adjustments in games. Did you sense that he was making the right adjustments to this team, or did Texas Tech just find a way to hit more shots?
No, I think he was making good adjustments. And what he was, his adjustment was, he went small. And you saw, like, Francis comes off the bench and has a huge game, and Edwards comes off the bench and he played really well. And then Odiase, their starting center, didn't really fight much until Owen fouled out later in the game. And then, you know, he came in and then he hit a bunch of, you know, big free throws too. But I think, you know, the going small was a good play because they were faster. They were a little more athletic and they were getting, they were shooting better from the outside. And that's what they needed to do, to break down Virginia's defense and give them a chance to get inside. So yeah, I thought that was not just a good in-game adjustment, but no, then the players carried it out too. I mean, if you put Francis in the game and he can't score, then that's an adjustment that doesn't work.
So now let's get to Virginia, because the story of them losing last year the way they did to that 16 seed in UMBC and now winning the title is a great story. I mean, it's a great way to bookend this. But overall, the arc of this team, how did they overcome it? What was it like throughout their tenure, going through not only this tournament, but throughout the offseason? Because I can only imagine to have that, to be the only team that has ever suffered that, has got to be different than any team that's ever had a disappointing loss in the tournament.
Yeah, there's no question. And what they did was they basically owned it. I mean, they said, all right, you know, that happened to us. We're not just going to try and bury it and pretend it didn't. You know, we're going to use it to motivate and to work even harder to overcome it. And we're not going to let that define who we are. And that's what they did. You know, all the crap about Tony Bennett's system not being able to win in March and April, that was always crap. But now they've actually definitively proved that that was crap. And it's a great story. I mean, Kyle Guy was walking around. He might have changed it by now, but he walked around all season long, you know, even here, with a picture on his phone from last year's block. That's, you know, that's daily motivation. Your phone, you're looking at it every single day, several times a day. And, yeah, it was a big factor in just the work that they put in. Not that they didn't work hard for, but, you know, there was a collective motivation to erase that memory.
Does this go hand in hand as the history of this championship gets put in the books? Does that loss in this championship go hand in hand, that you can't tell one without the other?
Yeah, I think that's always going to be the case, because that's the compelling part. I mean, winning a national championship is always compelling, but that's what makes this story particularly so. And the reason why we will always remember it is because of what happened before.
All right, now let's get into some off-the-court news. Were you surprised Rick Barnes is staying at Tennessee? And what does it say about the UCLA job that he is going to stay at Tennessee?
UCLA has got, I mean, one of the problems with filling that job is unrealistic expectations. And it's not just the fan base, but it's the administration, obviously. I mean, they're going after guys that, you know, they can't probably get. Or, you know, in Jamie Dixon's case, I mean, it's just, you know, Jamie Dixon, they knew what his buyout was. So why don't you want to pay it? If you don't want to pay his buyout, why are you chasing him?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's really been a comedy of errors, which doesn't mean they won't end up with a good coach. But they have to start thinking about, you know, who they are and not who they were. You know, once they stop living in the past and thinking that, you know, everybody, you know, thinks that the UCLA job is, you know, 15 national championships, none of which have been won, you know, in quite some time. Then they have to, you know, once they set their sights where they need to be, then they can get a pretty good coach. But, you know, they need to quit chasing just a name to have a name. They need to get somebody who can be a coach for this program, you know, and has a chance to succeed and succeed for a long time. That's not really what they're doing right now.
I asked you earlier if you were surprised by Barnes staying at Tennessee. You immediately said no. So why aren't you surprised that he's staying at Tennessee? I mean, UCLA may not be what it was, but it's still UCLA. Tennessee is always going to be a football school, no matter what you do with it in basketball. But is it still compelling to stay in Knoxville?
Yeah, I think, well, you got to understand, he's a 64-year-old guy who's got a good contract there and a good program. I mean, he's got something to build on at Tennessee. He's made it into a good program, and maybe when he leaves it, he'll leave it to be a good program for someone else. But how long is it going to take you to turn UCLA around? You know, maybe, you know, if you can recruit really well right away, maybe overnight, but, you know, that's not a quick fix, most likely. So, you know, do you really want to do that at this point in your career?
Overall, this tournament, I mean, it always has compelling storylines. Is there any takeaway other than Virginia doing what it did and what it did last year? What other takeaways do we get from the 3 weeks we just had of college basketball?
Well, we had a Final Four with three teams that had never won a championship, two teams that had never been to a Final Four. Virginia hadn't been since 1984. So we had a lot of new blood, in a sense, in this tournament. Michigan State, of course, is a regular at this event. But I thought that's, you know, kind of what made it interesting. It just kind of shows everybody that you don't have to be Duke or Carolina or Kentucky or Kansas to get here. You know, you can do it. Everybody can do it. And the fact that we had two first-timers here, I think, kind of gives, you know, new hope to a bunch of other schools that feel like they're probably fighting the system at some point.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports on the championship. Thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy the rest of your travels out of the Minnesota area.
All right, thank you.
You got it. Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, covering last night's game, Virginia defeating Texas Tech. I think he's right. I think this is, you don't talk about this championship without talking about last year. I think you can look at seasons, you can look at titles, and they all kind of stand on their own, right? And you can even ignore the regular season, right? I mean, there are teams that have struggled during the regular season and did really well in the NCAA tournament. We don't even talk about that. Like, we barely address it, right? We don't say like, oh, well, they had 11 losses and yet they were able to win the NCAA championship, or they barely got in and yet they won the NCAA championship. You know, we just talk about the tournament. But I don't think you could talk in the future about this Virginia team without talking about the fact that they lost to the 16 seed the year before. I think it goes hand in hand. I think it's part of the story. I think it's a story that they'll now even more embrace than they did. But what I like what he said about how they handled it, there's two schools of thought. And if you're a coach, you have to know your kids. You have to know your guys to understand which direction you want to take. Okay, so you suffer this embarrassing loss, right? And you know social media is going to be cruel. And you know that the fans and the alumni are going to want some sort of answers. And you know the kids are going to get bothered and they're going to be down and they're going to be depressed because a whole year of working to get a number one seed to have it destroyed and taken away by a UMBC team that, you know, ran them out. Didn't just squeak by them. I mean, really, really took it to Virginia and beat them handedly. So now you got to deal with that, and you know that your goal isn't the start of the season. It is to get back to exactly where you were before. It's to get to that exact moment again, so that you can start again to redeem yourself from what happened the year before. And Tony Bennett realized, okay, we could bury this and pretend it didn't happen, right? Because after April 1st or 2nd or whenever the championship game was played last year, everyone's done, right? We were just done early, but eventually everybody's done, okay? Then everybody's going into the program. So we can pretend it didn't happen, and we can just move on with our offseason, and we can pretend like, you know, right, we just lost in the tournament, like a lot of other teams did. Like 67 teams that did before, okay? Or you can embrace it and say, okay, listen, we're going to own this. We did that. And let's focus on the season and let's try to make that mean something as we progress and use it as motivation going forward. You have to read your guys, and he read his guys perfectly because they did. They didn't shy away from it. And now they don't have to answer for that. It's always going to be part of their legacy. Don't get me wrong. But now it is part of a complete story. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. You cannot say Virginia is the first number one seed to lose to a 16 without completing the sentence. They have also, following year, won a national title. That goes hand in hand, and you can't separate it. And anybody who does, remind them that the following year they won a national title because the two are together, and they're linked. All right, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio, Tony D, Ron Culver.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Ron, I just received the odds for next year's NCAA championship. If you're looking for a major future.
I'm looking for a major.
Kentucky plus 500. They're the favorites at 5-1 to win next year's national.
No, I can't do Kentucky. Next.
How about Duke at plus 600 at 6-1?
Yeah, because Zion Williamson will still be part of the team because he needs to work on his game to get past Jello.
Yeah, right. That's right. I can't be Jello.
I can't join the NBA yet. I got to work on my game, I guess. My shooting game.
This list is not really that interesting because it's just got like all the really good teams of college basketball. Virginia, Michigan State, Michigan, North Carolina, Gonzaga, Villanova, Kansas. Auburn is plus 3,300. Tennessee at plus 3,300. Texas Tech, we just saw them plus 3,300. Texas plus 3,300. USC plus 10,000.
Woo!
At 100 to 1.
Which USC?
Ah, good point. You get USC. Definitely not my USC.
I would say your USC over Southern California.
Well, no, they're not on this list. UCLA plus 10,000. So there you go.
Those maybe UCLA next year. USC.
I felt bad for that guy who had the future ticket, right? The Texas Tech future ticket.
Yeah,
I did feel bad for
him. He was.
And he had it.
I mean, how much
what
was
a roller coaster.
Did he break his TV? Do we know?
I don't know, man. But I heard that he was there was a six-figure offer on the table. At the last, like the last, within the last few hours.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I would have jumped all over that.
I remember how I said yesterday you would just enjoy the ride. Would he put 1,500 down?
He put 1,500 down. Could have
netted
about,
yeah.
Could have netted over 300.
I think I would have chickened out and said, "Nah, I'll take the six figures. I'm fine. I just want to get something."
Well,
because
he had put it up for sale for 60 heading into the Final Four.
Yeah,
heading into the weekend.
Now I don't know if it's true. I just heard a rumor before the game. He got a six figure offer for it. So, but I don't know if he took it or not. But I doubt he would have taken it. God, how nervous was he, like, in the final minutes? Like, they had the lead,
well,
and DeAndre
Hunter
hits the shot.
Does he still have a TV? Because in the final, right. I mean, Texas Tech is up, and then they essentially just let Virginia score again.
I swear to God, I could not do that if I had that much money. I couldn't watch. I'd be buried in my couch. Oh, it'd be crazy. SB Nation AM rolling along. SB Nation Radio. Tony D, Ron Culver. Hit us up on Twitter @TonyDRadio and @RonCulver. Ron with two N's. It's SB Nation AM.